You're listening to the Change Management Review Podcast, where we bring you the best tactics, strategies, and actionable insights for change through our powerful interviews with change management practitioners and leaders. And now here's your host, Teresa Moulton.
Welcome to the Change Management Review Podcast. My name is Teresa Moulton. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of the Change Management Review. And today we've got a real treat with us today, Edwina Pike. Let me tell you a little bit about Edwina. Ed is passionate about transforming businesses. She offers an unusual perspective, a deep understanding of leading transformational change and the pressures and dynamics that come with it. Ed spent 30 years transforming businesses across the globe, the last 10 in a senior leadership role, managing the high value, complex culture and behavioral changes that come with mergers and acquisitions. In 2019, Ed left the security of her corporate role to set up Pike Squared, an advisory firm specializing in guiding businesses through the toughest transformations and irrational change, focused on building behavioral science capability in her fellow change agents. As an expert in leadership, human behavior, culture, motivation, and value realization and inspiration, Ed often writes, speaks, and teaches. Ed is the innovator behind irrational change. And today, what we're going to talk about is about leaders, how leaders are humans first and leaders second. So without further ado, welcome Edwina, and tell me about why leadership is important.
Thank you, Teresa. What a great intro. Leadership is the number one driver of change. It's funny, we've been a behavioral scientist and following behavior, following how organizations change for decades. And whichever angle we look at it, leadership is the number one driver of organizational behavioral change. Now, there's a bunch of reasons for that. Part of it is the tribal nature of most organizations. Part of it is the fact that they control the safety within the team and the tribe. And we are motivated within our organizations. Where willingness comes from is in pleasing our boss. If there's any disconnect between what a change is asking for and what our boss thinks is important, believe me, we are going to go with our boss every time. So leadership really is a number one driver. We would actually say you can achieve as much change as you have the leadership conviction for. You can't avoid it. And we try and avoid it. But it's so essential.
Why do we avoid it?
Often because it's the tough conversation. We don't want to have a tough conversation with a leader. There's actually some deeper reasons that sit behind it. And it's a bit of a crisis in our leadership ranks right now, which is we have trained our leaders very badly. And I take it when I say we, I mean we as a change and project profession have trained our leaders very badly. They don't get to go to leadership school. They never get to go to leadership school. Unless you've been in the military, you really have never ever learned the basics of leadership. You learn it from those that are around you, and that is partly our responsibility. As projects and as change teams, we tend to want to make our leaders' lives easy. We try and do things for them. We run their communications for them. We write their communications for them. We make our steer codes very easy. We sit our leaders down. We entertain them for the time we have our steer codes. And we don't like to ask them to do things because they might judge us poorly. They probably haven't been used to be asked to do things by any other project team that's gone before you. So we avoid those tough conversations. How can you say to your boss, who may judge your performance, that actually they're not very good at leadership? It's a tough one.
Yeah. So what do we do about that?
So it's really fascinating. We have to look back at leaders and say, you know, what is it about leadership? Why, you know, let's be honest. I don't believe any leader gets up in the morning and looks in the mirror and thinks, I want to be a really bad leader today. I want to destroy my team's motivation. I want to tank the change that's going through. No leader does that. Leaders get up in the morning, they look in the mirror, and they want to be inspirational. They want to create an environment where change is going to happen. That's what they want. That's what they're there for. Uh-huh. But they just don't know how to. Not only that, the environment that they're working in is often quite, I don't know, there's a lot of barriers to doing what we're asking them to do in the world of leadership. I've noticed probably over the last 10 or 15 years that the need for productivity and efficiency has taken away the time that leaders would have had to think, to create relationships, and to learn new things. They are literally running at 100 miles an hour and just trying to get stuff done. And because of that, we try and help them. And it's that helping that is unhelpful, because by helping them, we're almost disempowering them. It's a really tough one.
It is tough. And one of the trends I've noticed too is that as leaders, you know, grow and the way that business is changing, they're responsible for a larger domain of functions. And they can't be experts at in enough depth in each function. So it's how do I do this work, you know, and do it well?
And for many leaders, their own sense of security, I mean, remember, leaders are humans first and leaders second. So they feel all the emotions we feel. They are not some superhuman power thing. And it's very easy to demonize leaders because we forget that they're humans first. And as a human, you know, I look at what has made me successful in the past and I hold on to that because I think that's still there to be true. Yeah. What's fascinating is the further and further you go up the leadership train, the lower and lower the levels of emotional intelligence and empathy. So the supervisor, direct supervisor level is really high because you have to. You know, these are the people you're working with day to day, you're motivating your team, very high levels. But the higher and higher you go up the train, the lower and lower the levels of emotional intelligence and empathy. So yeah, it's a hard job being a leader. And I think it's got harder and harder. I always used to say to my colleagues that you sell a piece of your soul, the each rung of the ladder you go up. It's a hard job.
It is a hard job. And I always found that stat that you quoted about the emotional intelligence to be very interesting, because they say that middle managers have 90% of the EI capability. And it's true what you said, that it goes down as you go up the ladder. But I keep thinking, how did these leaders get to be leaders? They must have had emotional intelligence and then forgotten it? Or what happened?
It's really fascinating. When you look at the dynamic, we promote leaders because they deliver something. They get promoted for the performance that they and or their team have delivered. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they had a direct impact on the delivery, but it means that their team was successful. And we promote them because naturally, as humans, we want more of the same. We think if we promote them, we're going to promote the same characteristics going up the tree. Now, unfortunately, our middle management levels are the ones I feel the most for, because that middle manager leaders, because they get no development at all. Most leadership development is targeted either the very, very senior leaders, where you're going to invest in it because they're very, very senior, or it's developed in often the high potential. You may get a little bit of manager training, which is not leadership. Right. Manager training if you're a new manager, but a high potential. And the high potential is going to be a very, very, very small group of young leaders who may or may not make it up the tree. So most leaders get zero development at all, which is why they learn on the job. Which is why it becomes our responsibility as project and change teams to teach them how to lead change, how to enable a change or project team.
So one of the things that comes to mind every time I think about you and what you talk about is brain hacks.
Yes.
So what are some of the brain hacks for leaders that we can employ as change professionals?
So remember, leaders are humans first and leaders second. So we have to think of them as humans. We would say that your first round of change targets is typically your project team. Your second round is your steerco and your leaders. So you're really thinking about them as a unique group of change targets in their own right.
Right.
First thing I would say is I would actually start out, if you get the opportunity to start out right, I would start out right with this. It's a little phrase. I love it to bits because it sets and primes the relationship you're going to have with the leader. When you first go into any conversation with any other human, you sort of do this like level setting. Now, we always say go in as an equal where you can, bring your expertise with you and go in as an equal. If you go in as someone who is subservient or a lower level, or it doesn't, and by the way, I don't mean don't be respectful, but if you go in as someone who is like lower level, who's there to serve the leader, and that's what you project, then the leader is going to take the more superior level here. And actually, in reality, you need to be as equal as you possibly can. Now, one of the ways we signal that is we use a phrase really, really early on in the relationship, in the honeymoon period, before anything goes wrong. Yeah. And we use this phrase, we say, I am here for your success and not your comfort. Uh-huh. I am here for your success and not your comfort. And we repeat it three or four times over the first couple of interactions that we have. Now, they will nod and agree because it's the honeymoon phrase. It doesn't sound terrible. In fact, you're here for my success. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that very much. And I agree to it. Now, my brain mentally recognizes that I've agreed to this. So 2 or 3 months later, when you rock up in their office or you rock up on a Zoom call and you say, remember what I said right at the very beginning, that I'm here for your success and not your comfort. And they'll say, yes. So So their brain is recalled that they committed to this. Mm-hmm. And then you say, this is going to be an uncomfortable conversation. Yep. Mm-hmm. They can't back out. They agree to it.
Right.
So there's a subtle brain hack that's going on there. The second one I would say, and this is a gift to any of the change agents out there, do not let any leader lead any change until they are ready. Because if you get a leader who has got a half-baked approach, who does not buy in, does not emotionally connect to the change, and they try and lead it, they're going to lead it from a half-baked place. And guess what? Their team is going to see that. And you cannot fake it until you make it anymore. That will be clearly visible to the rest of their team. And this is where we have a slight problem with leadership, because most leaders are really smart people and they leave it till the very last minute. So they know this stuff is happening. They get away being passive. I'll come back to that one in a second. But they basically leave it to the very, very last minute. And at the very last minute, they suddenly engage. They realize it's bigger than they thought it was. And the work they're going to have to put in is more than the time that they've left available. And they go with the bare minimum. And unfortunately, you can achieve as much change as you have the leadership conviction for. We watch our leaders constantly, 24/7. And when they go with the bare minimum, guess what signal they're sending? That the bare minimum is okay. That's not where your value sits.
Right.
So we catch the leaders early. So we recognize that they're cognitively overloaded. There's a lot going on. They're being pulled in a million different ways. But we take the stress over that last minute point. And we bring them up very early. Now, one of the tricks we use a lot now, thank you, podcast, thank you, video cast, whatever that is. And we basically say to them way up front, so we know we have to rearrange the mental model in the leader's head to create some conviction for the change. Because mm-hmm. if they don't have conviction, it comes through in everything they do and everything they say.
Right.
We catch them early. And we normally say, it's a technique we call the leader's story. And we catch them early enough that they don't feel they're up against pressure at the back end. Yeah. And we normally stop them and say, look, you know, we want to do a podcast. We're going to record you or a video, something that requires them to show up and be authentic, and their authenticity will be visible. All right.
Yes.
We're about the change because we think it's important for your team, and they can't really say no to it. And the ego of most leaders will, you know, they know they have to do it. It's part of their responsibility as a leader.
Right.
And the first thing they're going to say to you is, great, can you write me some talking points?
Exactly.
You're not going to do that. You're not going to say no, because if you say the words no, then they're going to feel that you're basically blocking them off and that you're not there to be helpful. And that's not what you're trying to do. You'll say, hey, how about this? We need your authentic voice to come through. And I don't want this to sound too scripted like a corporate communication, because we all know how that feels, don't we? And they'll resonate with that. And then you say, look, and you always give them some time. You say, how about you think about it over the weekend? Always give a few sleeps. And how about we catch up on maybe Tuesday? You share with me what you've got so far, and I can add anything extra in that you need that will just like raise it up to another level. Okay, they don't feel unsupported. They've got time to think. You've sent them away to think. Now, the idea of going on camera on audio basically means in our human brain, we don't want to embarrass ourselves because our teams are going to see this. So we now do the work and we give them five questions to think about. One of those questions is, why is this important to us? Why is this important to us? Yeah.
Right.
The second one is, what does it mean to my, you know, what does this mean to my team? What is this going to mean to us?
Right.
The third one is around, what is a day in the life of my team going to look like? This is where we start to try and build some empathy.
Yeah.
So, you know, take your team through what a day in their life is going to look like. And they may not know. And the chances are a lot of these questions, they may not have the answer to, but that in itself is a great thing because they're going to want to find out before they embarrass themselves on camera.
Right.
The fourth question is, what isn't changing? We truly believe that for great change to happen, you need to be grounded in some level of consistency or stability. Otherwise, it creates too much fear. That's where resistance comes from, is the fear of everything being turned upside down. The fifth question we ask is, why now? Why now?
Right.
Now, these are not rocket science questions, but what they do is they force the leader to go away and think about them. And as they're thinking about them, they're basically rebuilding the neuroscience and the pathways in their own brains. And as they're rebuilding those pathways, they're creating stories. Guess what? Once you've created a story and you've invested the time and effort behind it, you're more likely to use it. So if anybody asks you about a change, you go and recall that story.
Right.
Even if you didn't do the recording, you've basically put them through a process where their brains are rewiring themselves to think about the change. All right. And you're doing it outside the pressure of some big go live or big announcement.
And what I love about it is you're working with the human brain, right? You're really doing the behavioral change work and setting and leading the process for that. And they probably don't know that it's happening to them. They just know it feels good and they can achieve it.
because you definitely offer plenty of positive reinforcement. It feels good. It feels that the pressure doesn't feel on because it's not a massive great go live or town hall or whatever. And they know they sort of if you're a leader, you know you sort of have to do it.
Right.
You're very successful at the end because you get plenty of positive reinforcement. And yes, we don't say, look, we were rehacking the neuroscience of your brain.
Right. It's not in a plan.
Yeah. It's the secondary benefit of the fact that we actually want to generate some communications that is either audio or visual that shows your authenticity, shows you up as the best leader you can be.
Yeah, I love that. Those are great, great hacks. And so once you get them through that process, you have their story, you do the podcast, you've set really the messaging strategy for the program.
Yeah, for their team.
For their
team. Maybe different depending on the team, because remember, we look for authenticity in our leaders, and actually the killer of authenticity is corporate communications.
Yeah.
Corporate communications are really easy and they make it easy for the change in the project team, but they kill the authenticity of any communications in the organization. So what you're creating for each leader is you're creating their authentic story. And we do a couple of things after this. We basically, because one of the things we find generally is if a leader is passive about a change, and many are because they've never been asked anything else, we find the easiest way to stop them being passive about a change is to never let them get to the passive seat in the first place. We think about it as being like a school bus. And, you know, if you go on the school bus and you go to the back seat and you always go to the back seat and you sit on the back seat and you play with your iPhone or whatever phone you've got, you know, you're basically becoming passive. Now, that happens because we as a project team let it happen. So one of the other tricks we use in the language we use and the way we set up the rituals around regular meetings and interactions, we constantly ask our leaders and stakeholders to take small, almost inconsequential actions. We ask them to, we make sure they always feel a little bit involved, not necessarily full time, 24 hours a day, but they always feel a little bit involved doing things that only they is their unique role as a leader to do. We never let them just sit quietly. We never let them just sit at the background and wait for things to happen for them. We are constantly creating that. Now, we use some language hacks for that. Some of that is in the way we speak. So we don't talk about the or inanimate objects, the project, the design, the digital transformation. We talk about our. We ask them to do things. Could you speak to insert name of similar peer level leader that they should have a conversation with? We ask them to do small tasks, small, reasonable, you can't really say no to tasks. Most leaders are action orientated. And if you get the right tasks, they'll keep doing that. We basically encourage them, if you take the bus analogy, we encourage them never, ever to go beyond the driver's seat. Now, we don't necessarily want them to drive right at the very beginning. We want them to help us while we drive and they maybe navigate or help put a new wheel on.
But that's a new application of that
analogy. I love it. Exactly. But, you know, so we literally scoop them up. We never let them get beyond the driver's seat. So it's always like, hey, come help, come sit up front with me sort of approach to things. All too often, most projects and change teams get into a ritual and a dynamic where the steer co is this elevated superior group.
Right.
And it's their job to entertain them. It's like literally theater. Meetings are theater. And if you're speaking most in the meeting as a project or change group, you've got the balance wrong.
Right.
If you're reading out status reports in a meeting, you've got the balance wrong. We swap that around. We create interactivity through decision-making, through discussions, anything that causes you to feel a sense of involvement. And for the behavioral scientists, we're using IKEA bias in there, a sense of endowment. And ultimately, once you've brought that sense of ownership in, a sense of loss aversion, you don't want to lose what you've tried.
And so how do you bring emotion into the decision-making so that it becomes more engaging and more increases ownership?
So it's not so much about bringing emotion in. It's about stopping having any surprises, but also feeling that you're heard and that you can contribute.
Okay.
So there's a real dynamic around how I feel about something. So as humans, we are cognitively overloaded. We don't make rational based decisions, however much our brain would like to tell us that. We make emotional decisions and we remember how we feel about them.
Right.
Now, one of the biggest challenges that comes to group orientations like steer codes and stuff like that is that as humans, we've all got very different lived experiences, very different perspectives. And we often get surprised by the choices that projects and changes make. which leave us feeling disconnected. Now, I want my DearCo to feel highly connected and highly involved, but I don't want them to make every decision we're making along the way.
Right.
But I would make sure that there are some decisions which are the appropriate ones for that group to discuss, which may be about future, maybe about something else. It creates involvement where they take part in the discussion and the conversation. Now, there's a second trick going on here. When it comes to how to create the dynamic, so if you want to be a more inspiring leader, there are three things you can do. And we use this in a sort of reverse leadership approach, because the more you feel this, the more you will feel that that environment is one you want to be part of, the more your CEO wants to turn up to your CEO's conversations because they find them useful, insightful, they take part and there's action involved, the more likely they are to keep coming back and be active.
Yeah.
So we do this thing, we basically hook into these three things. The first thing is we want to be heard. So make sure they get the chance to be heard. Okay, manage your group so if there is one person always speaks, that they get their fair chance, but you also give others the chance as well. Create a ritual that allows that. The second one is they want to feel valued. So make sure that they feel that their contributions are valued and they should be. Don't ask them to make decisions that the project team should be making. These guys should be talking about the strategic decisions about big resource allocation that the project team cannot make.
Mm-hmm.
The final one is they want to feel included. So as humans, if we feel heard,
mm-hmm.
if we feel valued, and if we yep. feel included, we are more likely to follow someone. And in the case of a project, you've got a slightly weird dynamic going on where leaders will actually follow the project team or follow the project leader if they establish the right level of leadership and
yeah.
take their inspiration from them. So we create this dynamic. Whenever I'm doing a Steerco meeting or something like that, I don't ever, ever, ever read out status, ever, ever. I structure all of the communications you get so it looks and feels differently to every other Steerco that goes on in the building, because I don't want to bring forward those behaviors. I want to create a different set of behaviors. So I structure my documents in such a way that decisions are up front, that we basically give you the information for discussion, that we basically start with those conversations so you feel good about those, rather than let's talk through every single work stream. Why is this red? It's still red for the last, you get the idea.
And how do the leaders respond to that? Do they feel like they're getting enough detail?
So this is where the magic happens. And this is a bit of human behavioral dynamic you don't realize necessarily. But once I tell you this and we'll show you this, you're going to see it now everywhere. Whoever is the leader of the meeting, whoever creates the meeting, is the official leader of the meeting, irrespective of the seniority level of anybody in the room. Whoever starts them, whoever creates that meeting, whoever is the meeting leader, is the official leader. They need to take that space. If they don't take that space, then they basically give it over to everyone else. So what we do in that, the way we communicate, is we keep it very simple, because ultimately humans are really busy, make it easy. We also assume that nobody ever reads the pre-read. We expect people not to. We don't give them a 6-page pre-read like Amazon does, but we'll give you a very simple pre-read. And if necessary, we'll give you 5 minutes at the beginning to read through for each decision before each discussion before we get to that.
Interesting.
Now, we structure our document in such a way that you've got the short summary for those that just haven't got the attention span to read anything more. But then at the back, we tuck some appendices in there, not obliged for everyone to read. Because I'll be honest with you, for most executives, I've done it myself. If you send me a pre-read for a Steerco meeting and it's like 20 pages, I'm not going to read it. If you send me something that's 2 pages, I'm going to read it. I'm going to do my homework. Now, I also know that if you send me the 20-page one, there is a high chance that I might be the only person that reads it. And that's to my advantage in the conversation, because nobody else will have done. So you can use the way that you communicate, the way you structure the data that you send, the insights you send. You can use that to frame, to create, to reinforce the conversation. But a lot of it comes down to how you lead that meeting. Now, as you are the leader of the meeting, you get to call when we move on to the next subject, how much we talk about this subject, how you frame that subject. And you need to own that and boss that right from the very beginning.
Yeah. You know, as you're talking, I'm starting to really get excited about this thinking, because you've taken it beyond just the keep the one pager, right? You've brought the decisions forward. You're taking away the FOMO by putting the detail in the appendix. But you're controlling how much information somebody has to consume, and that and the inherent motivation it is there to consume it. So one of the questions that I have is, assuming you have this said meeting, and there's conflict that comes up, do you step into a team coaching role, or how do you operate in that way with the behavior hacks that you use?
So we always believe that we always, I was going to say most of the time, I'm going to say most of the time, it's hard to say. We believe that conflict is not necessarily conflict. Conflict is more a case of there's two sets of lived experiences. So right. That's when we move to asking questions to understand why there's a difference. What are we seeing that's different?
Right.
So that's when we move to asking questions. So I'm not sure it's a coaching role as much as a curiosity role that says, okay, what are you seeing that we're not seeing? What are you seeing that Bill's not seeing? Bill, what are you seeing that Fred isn't seeing? So try and open up, because actually when you see that conflict, if it comes over as conflict or emotion, it tends to be a frustration that somebody's seeing something that others aren't seeing and wants to be heard for it.
Right.
So yes, we would manage that. Now, I would also say that in a lot of cases, and this may be controversial here, in a lot of cases, executives and leaders agree on the what of something.
Okay.
But they're fighting over the how.
Uh-huh.
What I've learned over all the decades, and there is a proviso here, there is a caveat here. Assuming you have a really, really good tangible outcome, a very clearly defined what, and I have to say 98% of the projects we look at don't have one of these.
Right.
But if you have one of those, if you are that project that has that, then you can let them go with the what and give flexibility on the how.
Yes.
Autonomy. Humans want autonomy. They don't want to be controlled and micromanaged.
Right.
Give them autonomy and empowerment within the boundary lines of what good looks like and what bad looks like. Give them the autonomy to deliver against that what on whatever date you need it to be delivered by.
Right. How do you bring this type of thinking to the project team to ensure there's alignment between what's happening with the leaders, human leaders, and the human doers?
So this is a really interesting one. So the first, what we, the way we look at it is the first round of change targets in any project is your project team.
Yep.
Because the biggest thing that will constrain your ability to be able to do this is your project team.
Right.
Because your project team have the most to lose, because you risk having conversations with your CEO and your leaders that they are not in control of,
right,
and that might have a kickback on them.
Right.
So your first round of change targets is your project team, and your first round is to recruit them so that they can see what you're seeing, so they understand the strategy that you're following and buy into it and can see how that's going to make success. Now, there is a natural tension in any change project, and the natural tension is this: your project team are entirely laser-like focused on delivering a product.
Right.
You're a change agent. You are entirely focused on delivering an adopted, the adoption of that project product and the value that gets delivered out of it. So your
right.
project team gets the t-shirt, they get the cake, they get the celebration for delivering the product. You get left holding the baby while they all run off to the next thing. So you
right.
have a natural tension that comes in, and it's a challenge because whilst they are literally motivated to deliver the product, you are literally fighting against each other.
Yes.
Now, more project teams should be focused and targeted on delivering the adopted value, the value realization once it is fully adopted, and it shows through in the business case. And they talk about business cases.
Yeah.
But if you try and hold them to that, they will wiggle like nothing else.
Right.
Simply because it's outside their control.
Right.
And that's the first change you have to take your project team through. And they are your first round of targets. Now, typically in most change projects, you know, you get brought in as a change agent, you go off and do a change strategy, a change plan, because they ask you to do that. And then you start focusing on project comms because it's too early to focus on everybody else's. No, don't do that. Spend your first bit, do a quick change plan, because they obviously need to see something that you're being successful, that you're doing the job they expect you to do. But
yeah.
then ignore, you know, move on from that, and then basically start using your project team as your first round of targets and create the environment for you to be successful as a change agent.
Beautiful.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Your project team first, your steer coach and leader second. Then your change targets.
I think that's breakthrough thinking.
You know what? It's one of those practical things that once you see it and you realize it and you do it, it makes life so much easier. But your first job as a change agent is to create the environment for you as a change agent to be successful. Because of the history of every project that's gone before you, they are going to be into rituals and routines that stop that happening for you, or can cause a barrier for you.
Yes.
Unless you have already built the trust in your own organization, in which case you will have the autonomy and empowerment you need. If you haven't got that, your project team is your first round of change target.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So, Ed, we're about out of time. What would you like our audience to take away from this in terms of like the one, maybe I know there's more than one, but the one main idea that you would like to get out to the world?
So in this session, I would say it's the leaders are humans first and leaders second.
Okay.
And that your leaders have been trained by every other project team that have gone before you. If you want
That's
different
interesting.
outcomes, you have to do different things. And retraining your leaders, giving them a better understanding of what it really takes to lead, is going to be a great investment of your time.
I love it. That is really, really well said. And if listeners want to get a hold of you and all of the awesome, services that and experiences you offer, where should they find you?
Look for something called irrational change. Anywhere, whether it's LinkedIn or on the internet, look for irrational change. We post daily insights. You'll get a lot of this sort of disruptive thinking. We've basically applied behavioral science to the field of changing organization behaviors and leadership. So we have deeper insights than you're going to find in most places. And we have some really amazing brain hacks that, like this, that would just make your life easier.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ed. And hopefully we'll bring you back as your thinking evolves, in the near future.
My pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Change Management Review Podcast. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.